With the upcoming presidential transition, most of Washington is thinking about immigration or health care or bathroom policy, how to sustain it on one side, how to reverse it on the other. But there's also the potent issue of national security. For more on what the incoming crew needs to know now and do then, we turn to David Eagles, director of the Center of Presidential Transition at the Partnership for Public Service. David, good to have you back.
Thank you.
So national security, I guess, must worry any incoming transition team. They might have a lot of confidence about domestic and social policy, but national security is no joke.
It is absolutely no joke. And as we've spoken about before, I mean, again, these transitions are big. They're complex, but they're really a period of vulnerability for the country. And you've got 73 days, essentially, between election and inauguration. And it's a time that's it's delicate. And the new teams coming in historically have not had instruction manuals. There's nothing generally for them to turn to get up to speed on day one. And so here at the Center for Presidential Transition, we're trying to fill the void, highlight the issue of national security because it is important, and reflect on who the players are because we can do this so much better.
At what point does the incoming team, or at least the incoming president anyhow, have the right to, say, look at the early bird briefings?
Yeah, so basically the way it works right now is at convention time. So in late July, ODNI is able to provide security briefings to the candidate. And these are not full security briefings. They're generally at the discretion of the president or ODNI. But they will begin writing them in, essentially, into what's going on around the world. That's when the process starts. But you've hit a good point that the outgoing administration plays a critical role. And this really started during the Bush administration. At a post-9/11 environment, they recognized that the landscape had changed. And so it does start much earlier. And there's new pieces of legislation that the president has signed, which codifies a lot of that work from Bush to Obama, that ensures there are tabletop exercises with the cabinet, and a whole host of other features that the national security apparatus can do much better this time.
Describe those a little bit more. What happens in these tabletop exercises? Who attends them, and how frequently do they take place, and at what point between the election and inauguration do they take place?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, even legally, the National Archives load up the files on essentially military jets the day of inauguration. They move all of these things to the libraries. So I always reflect on Josh Bolton, the outgoing George W. Bush chief of staff, who basically said there's nothing. He inherited nothing coming in, and he wanted to leave it better than he found it. And so he came up with this concept of what I call side saddle exercise, where you basically had the outgoing cabinet officials with the incoming cabinet officials. It was done in the January timeframe, mid-January, so it was prior to the inauguration of the new incoming president. And they discussed various scenarios. They really tried to test our response mechanisms with several scenarios concurrently. And it was really an interesting exercise that the incoming team could learn how the outgoing team makes decisions. And in talking to Josh and others, who's on our advisory board here at the center, he mentioned there's a lot more we can do to do it better. We can start that process earlier. We can engage the career workforce around it. And so that's one of the aspects that we're trying to do here at the center is to think about that black swan exercise, that tabletop exercise, and see how we can do it so much better.
Yes, you did have those discussions among people involved with all of this. What were some of the other comments and concerns that people expressed when it comes to national security transition?
So it's interesting. Again, as I said, there's virtually nothing for these incoming teams. One thing that the Bush administration did, and we're happy to see the Obama administration thinking closely about, are the various offices in the White House. So the National Security Council, for example. And what the Bush administration did was fairly early, actually the equivalent of February or March of this year, Stephen Hadley and others directed that staff to put together memoranda that focused on key countries and key issues so that the incoming team had something to inherit. The incoming staff, the NSC staff, could actually look at those, understand the issues a little bit better, understand the decisions they need to make. That was a big win. That's definitely a best practice. It's something we're working closely with the outgoing administration now on, and that's something that they should really accelerate, are these critical issues in national security. How do you highlight them? Think about memoranda for the incoming team and be able to facilitate a good process right after the election when these teams come in.
We're speaking with David Eagles, director of the Center for Presidential Transition at the Partnership for Public Service. And what about relations with individuals who are world leaders or country leaders that the new president might encounter? They all have their probably peculiarities and ways that are effective of dealing with them, or ways you could actually really piss them off, I guess, if you say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. Is that kind of information transmitted, or should it be?
You know, it definitely should. And again, to even just take a step back in that, again, historically, these teams have started from scratch in transition. But as you know, you can't really afford that. The modern president can't afford that to keep the country safe and prosperous and be ready to govern on day one. And so that's one of the critical aspects of transition. It's something that we focused on 4 years ago with the Romney transition. We looked at the protocol of how you converse with world leaders. There is some protocol to that. There's an order that you call these folks generally, even though there's some discretion to it. And you're generally briefed in by the folks at the State Department and elsewhere on how to deal with these folks. That's one of the aspects that, again, we can pull forward early. I mean, these transition teams are starting earlier than ever before in history. This is one of the aspects that they can add into their portfolio so that we make it the smoothest and most successful transition in history.
Like, don't give Vladimir Putin Stolichnaya of vodka because it's not really made in Russia.
Exactly. And I think that's definitely part of what we're going to integrate into their plans. I think that's spot on.
And what about dealing with the standing national security leadership, such as the chairman and the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff?
Well, and it's an important point, too, that there are folks who actually stay on during transition beyond the political cycle and the nature of the national security apparatus. Are there not a lot of political appointees? It is primarily career workforce, and that's very important to ensuring continuity during this period. But I can say that the interface between those career and political appointees is of critical importance. And historically, these incoming politicals have had very little to get up to speed. And having been a former appointee myself, that onboarding process is generally inconsistent at best. And so that's one of the reasons why we've developed a curriculum here to run political appointees through many topics that they may not understand coming from the private sector. It's the same in the national security space as well. If folks are coming from the private sector, those folks could run through a set of curriculum that we would provide to get them up to speed. And then I think what can happen is the engagement with the career workforce can actually happen much earlier. These political appointees can be much more prepared. They're starting earlier. They're thinking about these issues so that the conversations can be so much better.
Yeah, we talk about the president a lot, but at the cabinet and, say, deputy secretary level, there are all of those issues. It seems like you've got cultural issues on how to deal with the federal bureaucracy and how not to. Then there's the technical issues about email you can use or email you can't use. And then there are the actual programmatic issues, which probably when you get close to them are a lot more complicated than they sound as political debate.
That's exactly right. And I think if we take a step back from transition, again, what historically has happened is these teams, A, they don't get their people in. And there was a 2004 9/11 commission report that stated, you know, 6 months into and 9 months into these presidential administrations, you still don't have critical staff in place. And that 9/11 commission report was focused on the security apparatus. So they're not getting their people in, and there are 4,000 appointments that they've got to do. 1,100 of those are Senate confirmed. Take almost a year after they've been elected. These modern presidents are getting less than a third of those appointees in, and that's no way to run a business. It's no way to run certainly the most complex and powerful entity in the world. And then historically, these teams have also not been ready to execute on their campaign promises. And this, again, speaks to not being ready to govern on day one. And so what they've done is they come in and they typically close the door. It's very easy for politicals and new teams. It's just human nature to come in to close the door, to figure out how I'm going to execute on these campaign promises. And if they do the transition right, they start earlier than ever before, which they've done. They work with now available resources that we have here at the Center for Presidential Transition. These conversations can be so much better with the career workforce, and they can be ready to lead and govern on day one.
I guess you could barge into the deputy secretary's office, and if you find him or her on their knees, they're probably praying, what do I do next here? And the final touch on is Congress, and I guess relations with Congress can also be fraught with difficulty without a little bit of preheating ahead of time.
That's exactly right. And the issue of Congress was brought up. We recently had an event this week around national security with Stephen Hadley and with former Congresswoman Harman, Michelle Flournoy, and Ambassador Negroponte, and they spoke to this issue of how important Congress is. It's an area that pre-election, these transition teams historically have not thought a lot about, or the engagement that they've had formally with Congress has been limited. And there's a lot more that can be done and pulled earlier into the conversation that these teams are having with Congress, because Congress is important not only in getting your people through the Senate confirmation process. They're critically important on executing your campaign promises. You need Congress to be an ally here. And the good news is I think these teams recognize that, and they're going to start much earlier, and I'm confident at the end of the day we'll have a much better process for it. But it's critically important to work closely with Congress.
David Eagles is director of the Center for Presidential Transition at the Partnership for Public Service. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate the time.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.